With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind here on this Sunday night, VolQuest.com and VolQuest on the YouTube channel. I appreciate you guys for being here. I'm Mary Kane. That is Brent Hubbs. We have got a full slate ahead of us as we're live here on the YouTube channel until 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Tennessee Titans coach Alec Ablin is set to join us in just a couple of moments. Tennessee defensive lineman Byron Young, who was fresh off an appearance at Mobile at the Senior Bowl for the Reese Senior Bowl. He'll join us in segment number two. Grant Ramey will join us at 8:30 to discuss Tennessee basketball and its win over Auburn. And then Austin Price will join us at 8:45 to kind of close out the show. A lot going on right now. And, of course, $29.99 for 1 year, VolQuest.com subscription. And it's a great deal right now up until kickoff for the 2023 season. Brent Hubbs, a lot going on right now. The big news of the week would be Tennessee has closed out its coaching staff for 2023 and promoting Alec Ablin from offensive analyst to tight ends coach.
Yeah, and obviously Josh Heupel feel very comfortable with Alec and where he's at, and a good backstory, interesting story. They've been around each other for a long time, and he's been around this offense for a long time, and I'm sure he's excited about the opportunity that's in front of him here. And Josh Heupel, again, showing a ton of confidence with people within his building. Did the same thing with Kelsey Pope a year ago, going that same route with Alec Ablin now.
Yeah, no doubt. And joining us right now here on the Rocky Top Rewind is new Tennessee tight ends coach Alec Ablin. Alec, thank you so much for taking the time. Congratulations and good Sunday evening.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Alec, I want to know, man, how excited are you for this opportunity, kind of getting the word that you were going to get promoted up and to join the on-the-field staff, and kind of what's ahead with this offense and everything going on with Rocky Top right now? How excited are you to kind of have this new role?
There's really not words. Obviously, as a young coach, you work a lot of hours, spend a lot of time in the building, and hope you get a chance for this, and couldn't be more excited to get to work.
Alec, when you think about the process, I mean, I'm sure you were hoping to be a candidate when Coach Golish left. You weren't sure what direction for sure that Coach Heupel was going to take. What's the last 2 months been like? Has it been something you've thought a lot about, or have you not allowed yourself to think about it and just kind of put the head down and go to work? How have you approached this two-month period of waiting on an answer?
You know, I think you got to treat it like anything else and just control what you can control, and be lying if I said I wasn't able to think about it or kind of push it away. But, you know, as soon as, you know, Coach Golish left and Coach Heupel and I had initial conversations just about the process and what it would look like, really was just excited to get to work with the guys and think through the bowl game and even the last couple of weeks, just getting to spend time with them and kind of getting to grow in that role and kind of show them, one, that someone they can trust and be confident in being able to help them, but also really just confirm myself that, shoot, man, you can do this. You're supposed to be doing this. You're ready for this. And, you know, it's obviously would have loved for it to happen right away and have a lot better sleep for a couple months. But at the same time, I'm glad it did play out the way that it did. I know just there's a timing for everything, and the way that it happened, really, you don't realize until looking back, but things were there for a reason, and I'm really grateful that it played out like it did.
Alec, with your background, obviously a former offensive lineman at Missouri in the SEC, working with Glenn Ellerbe and the offensive line at a couple different stops, even here at Tennessee, how is that going to help you coaching the tight ends that obviously have a huge role in blocking and doing a lot of other things in this offense?
People forget I was actually so bad at blocking people. My senior year, I actually got moved to a tight end fullback role. And, you know, that's one of the things I think about Coach Heupel. And, you know, I'd started games until an injury my junior year as a guard. And going into my senior year, got beat out. And I think in a lot of places and a lot of programs, it's just kind of tough and is what it is. And we had some special tight ends at Missouri at that time, but people were banged up. And for Coach Hype to see not just an opportunity to give me a role, but be able to help and kind of shift to that room, like, made that year so much fun for me, just in that I still had a role. And as far as football, just grew in my love of the game. As far as how it translates to tight end play, I think the run game is obvious. Schematically, we're all on the same page. It all fits. There's really six guys, a back and a quarterback, that are making the run game go. Protection-wise, not just who they're supposed to be on, which I think is maybe the hardest part, but how to actually get them blocked. But don't get it twisted. I think in the route, I've been in this offense since I was 20 years old. I've been in the staff room since I was 22. You see a lot. You learn a lot. You understand space. I'm a football junkie at heart. So to me, that part of the game is really exciting. And something that, just because I'm an O-lineman, still feel really confident about that side of it as well.
Alec, lots of people are going to wonder or be curious and keep a close eye on how recruiting goes, right? And it's not just one guy. Let's be real honest here. I mean, Tennessee is a program that sells itself as a program, not just one individual. But what are the challenges for being a first-time coach in recruiting? What are you looking forward to? What do you think is the biggest thing you have to learn, hurdle you have to cross, if you will? Talk a little bit about kind of where you are in the and being able to now go on the road and recruit.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I'm really excited about it. It's whenever guys are able to come on campus, that's obviously the best part of recruiting as a support staff guy, just because you get to meet their families, you get to be in person with them. With rules, we're allowed to communicate over the phone, and that's something that, you know, Coach Heupel, Coach Ellerby have done a great job of, not just encouraging, but using support staff in recruiting where you are involved, even without being the full-time guy. But in terms of as the full-timer, one, having the ability to go see them in person, having the ability to sit down and meet mom and dad, go visit high schools. I know I'm excited to get back to St. Louis and see some of those guys and really just get in front of these tight ends, to be honest with you. I'm really excited about it.
Alec, you obviously played under Josh Heupel and Glenn Ellerby your last couple of years in Missouri, and you've been with them in the meeting room for quite some time. There was a brief period when you were at Ole Miss, and then when Josh Heupel got the job here at Tennessee, you know, offered a position, and you decided to come back. Why did you decide to come back at that point in time? And, you know, what have you kind of learned more from Heupel and Ellerby these last 2 years here on Rocky Top?
Yeah, it was an easy decision to come back for a lot of reasons. As a young coach, every move I made was growth focused. And I think at UCF, I learned so much about who I wanted to be as a coach, who I wanted to be as a person. Obviously got just fully immersed in what we do on offense. With the decision to go to Ole Miss, there was a ton of growth there, and just being with Leb and being back in the SEC, getting to learn from a different O-line coach that had roots in the offense, and getting to work for Coach Kiffin was a great experience. I learned a ton. At the end of that year, when Coach Hype called, it was not a tough decision to come back. And just the last 2 years, it's really interesting. So at UCF, obviously the situation you walk into is, you know, they were undefeated, Peach Bowl champs the year before Coach Hype got there. And I got there in year two. So as far as guys knowing what was going on, standard being set, system being in place, kind of came into it in year two. And at Ole Miss, year one, COVID hits, a little bit different situation there. But really getting to see Coach Hype and Coach Ellerby year one here at Tennessee, Coach Halsley, the same thing, reminded me a ton of when I was 20 years old, junior at Missouri, and things, we were 120th in offense the year before and ended up having a lot of success. But just to me, what was so striking this turnaround coming back was just what year one looks like when you are building trust, when you are getting guys to buy in, when you've got 20 guys that have transferred out before you even get there and you got half a roster. Just kind of where the program was at 2 years ago to where it is today is really kind of cool looking back. And, you know, I think it speaks volumes about who we are as a staff and really who those kids are. And I think about guys like Hendon, guys like Jerome Carvin, dudes that really early bought in and kind of changed the culture of this place. But no, that's really the biggest thing in the last 2 years. It's just what it looks like to totally flip a place culture-wise.
Alec, I'm going to ask you one more, and we got to let you go because I know you got to get going, and you got some stuff you got to get done here in a couple of minutes. But I do want to ask you about your position group specifically. You inherited an interesting room. Jacob Warren's a cagey veteran. You've got a transfer coming in who's a veteran who's played a lot of football in a different system, and then you're searching after that. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what you're looking for this spring, what your focus is between now and the start of spring with your guys?
I mean, it's the cliche ball coach answer, but just looking to see everybody compete. Obviously, Jacob's awesome and really excited that he's back. Just in a couple weeks getting to work with Cali, I think ball fans should be really excited about what he's going to be able to do this fall. We've got a bunch of other guys that are going to contribute in terms of whatever their role may be, whether it's something that I – how I was used as a senior, whether it's something along those lines, and whether we play more 12, whether we play more 11. There's a lot of guys in the room that have a chance to help us. I think Ethan Davis is going to be really special. Really excited that I get to work with him. And you know, spring is really about seeing how much we can put on those guys early and really seeing, you know, are they going to be able to be ready? More so Ethan, just as a true freshman. It's a little bit different for Cali, just in having played 3-4 years of college football. But really looking forward to the spring and seeing those guys grow.
Hey, Alec, man, appreciate the time. I know you got a busy night here coming up, so squeezing about 10 minutes in with us to kick off this Rocky Top Rewind. We appreciate it. Congratulations. Look forward to seeing what you and the rest of the staff does with this team over the spring and next year, and we'll have to get you back on soon, all right?
Of course, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. That is Tennessee's new tight end coach, Alec Ablin. Third promotion from within. Real quick, Brent, Josh Heupel, we talk about it all the time. He's very secretive, very protective of his offense. Promotes Kelsey Pope up last year, promotes Joey Halsley up to offensive coordinator, and now Alec Ablin from analyst to tight ends coach. I think it says something, and it's almost like that's kind of how it should be, right? You bust your tail, you get the promotion, you go up. But, I mean, this is kind of a Josh Heupel trademark now.
Yeah, it certainly has proven to be the case, and I think you could hear it in Coach Ablin's voice. I mean, his confidence in this offense and his knowledge and his depth of knowledge in this offense as a former guard who learned it on the field as a player. You know, he's not a guy who's come in from somewhere else and had to learn it as a guy rooted in a different system. This is the system he's been rooted in since he was 20 years old, as he mentioned. I think the biggest question and the biggest challenge that he has and what's going to be interesting to watch is just what is the recruiting ability? What's the reaction long-term with recruits, with him? And it's not to say he can't recruit. That's not the suggestion at all. It's just there's no resume there. And so that's something that he'll have to really work on and really improve himself over the next couple of years. But again, it's not just him, okay? It's everybody's got to recruit. Everybody's got to help. The program's obviously got to sell itself. You got to continue to have success on the field. But from a football knowledge standpoint, anybody you talk to will tell you how much he knows about this system and why that's why Josh Heupel went this way, because it's the from a transition standpoint, it's an easy transition football-wise. It's just they've got to go out and be able to recruit.
Hope to be joined by Byron Young here in the next couple of moments. But before we do, Trent does have a question here, Brent. He says, do you really think they need more than two tight ends with the lack of rotation on offense because of the tempo? Obviously, for depth and injuries is nice, but would a third actually play? There have been formations, Brent, to where they do have three tight ends on the field, not an awful lot, normally in the goal line situations. But the way I kind of see that is Tennessee's been very fortunate the last 2 years to not have injuries at that tight end position, because if so, I think they'd be up a creek a little bit.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. I mean, you see at the goal line, you might see them get into two tights, but they had to avoid being in a lot of two tight situations because they couldn't take a chance on getting somebody banged up. Yep. Or getting somebody wore out. Now, we'll see where Heupel and Joey Halsley go. Alex Golish got a lot of tight end background, okay? He was at Iowa State, tight end guy. He incorporated some more tight end stuff, I think, into Josh Heupel's offense when he was with him at UCF and then obviously at Tennessee. I don't think Golish ever got into all the tight end stuff he wanted to get into because he didn't feel like he had enough depth to be able to do that. So, yeah, they're going to have to – They need to find a third tight end for a couple of reasons. One, for depth for this year. But the two guys he just talked about, your transfer and Jacob Warren, are seniors, right? I mean, they're done after this year. So you better develop a third tight end and a fourth tight end this year where you can roll into next season, you know, next spring thinking, okay, we've got a chance here. We're not going to put this all on freshmen, or we're not going to put this all on Ethan Davis and a couple of transfers out there. So, Eric, I think you absolutely, to answer Trent's question, I think you have to continue to build there. And, yeah, you need three tight ends because, as you mentioned, very fortunate with two guys who have struggled with injury their whole career that you got through the season the last 2 years with Princeton Fant and Jacob Warren the way you have.
All right, we're going to roll on here with this Rocky Top Rewind, take a short 60, and when we return, we hope to be joined by Tennessee defensive end Byron Young, who was down in Mobile, Alabama for the Reese's Senior Bowl. What was that experience like, and how much did he help himself? We'll hear from Byron Young when we return right here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night, 8 o'clock until 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane, and please like this video and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. As we wait for our next guest to join the show, Brent, Tennessee and All-Star Games, a lot of noise has been had. Darnell Wright, a lot of positive praise. Hendon Hooker, though he couldn't even join the on-the-field festivities, but he was there. And then Byron Young, we'll start with Darnell Wright getting a Practice Player of the Week honor, and a lot of first-round chatter here from Mobile.
Well, and I'm not stunned that – I mean, I'm not surprised that he's the guy who generated buzz. You know, I think the biggest question a lot of people had with him was kind of what kind of personality is he? Who is he? Because he had not done any media during his time at Tennessee. And so that's a result, I think, Eric, and some people wondered kind of what he was about. And on the field, I don't think anybody had any questions, what he was going to be able to do. And I thought his physicality showed up, his quickness showed up. And we all know how much, the NFL is looking for tackles. And I think he certainly has helped himself a great deal. I don't know about the first round. We'll see. It's all going to be about right team, right place, right situation. But there's no doubt he's going to hear his name called earlier in the draft. And some people thought it would be before he went to the Senior Bowl and got started there. So, good for him. I'm happy for him. I thought he performed well. I think Jerome Carvin in a different bowl game did some good things. As for Hendon Hooker, I mean, really, Eric, are we surprised that people are impressed with Hendon Hooker when they visit with him and they talk to him? I don't think anybody is stunned by that idea or that notion that Hendon Hooker is impressive when you visit with him. The one thing is that Hendon Hooker did a good job of that helped himself. Was it wasn't just he was there politicking or he was there, you know, kind of bouncing around to see people. He was engaged with everything that was going on football-wise. Meeting rooms, you know, on the sidelines and the huddles trying to learn as much as he could. I think that a lot of NFL people came away feeling like he's much more or as much of a football junkie as they were hoping he would be. And that's what you got to have at that position. You got to have a quarterback who's 100% invested in what he does. And I think those of us who've covered him know that that's who Hendon Hooker is. Outside people still want to see it for themselves, and they got a taste of it this week.
Yeah, Jim Nagy, who's the director of the Senior Bowl, he joined the Paul Feinbaum show earlier this week and was essentially asked, like, hey, why is Hendon Hooker there? He's hurt. He's injured right now. And he's like, hey, he was the face of college football this past year. He deserves to be here. And it's a unique situation, but we're going to allow him that opportunity to meet with these teams and to sit in the meeting rooms and see what he's got. And so, no shock that he's down there. No shock that you're hearing a lot of good things from him down there. As far as Darnell Wright, I mean, you know, the people who were down there covering this bowl, Lewis Reddick, you know, ESPN is one that comes to mind. He mentioned him as one of his guys who stood out. You had former NFL general manager Mike, you know, Tannenbaum saying that, you know, he's a 40-plus game starter in the SEC, unbelievable week. He's going to make himself into the first-round type pick. That's really good news in there. And Byron Young appeared on some other boards as well as a guy that was popping on video and all that. So, you know, back to Hendon Hooker a little bit. How much can he specifically help himself this week, not going through those drills, but just being there, whereas you see some other quarterbacks who had the opportunity to be there, chose not to go?
Well, and I think that's the thing. I mean, you know, Hendon wanted to be around as many NFL guys as he could be around. And it's a smart move by Hendon to do that because, I mean, teams aren't going to fly Hendon Hooker around the country to come to their facility and spend the day with him because they can't work him out, right? He's not going to go through pro day. So if Hendon Hooker wanted to get in front of the NFL, that was going to be his opportunity to do it. And he took full advantage of that. Think about the noise Hendon Hooker has made, Eric, in the last 2 months, right? I mean, and it's all been about who he is and what he's about. I mean, here's a guy who got national stories written about him for zooming in to team meetings for, you know, a team getting ready for a bowl game with his friend Joe Milton to help him out as much as he can, while a lot of other guys are opting out. And when they opt out, they just disappear, right? They're done, you know, and he was not doing that at all. So he gets plenty of acclaim for that. That's a check mark in his favor. Then he goes to the Senior Bowl and interacts with everybody the way he does. And again, helps himself. I mean, when you're in his situation with the injury standpoint, you've got to find everything you can do to make yourself more marketable and to make somebody believe in you. You know, somebody's got to be sold on you. And you do that in Hendon's case because he can sell his personality and he can sell what he's about from a work ethic standpoint. And I think he did a solid job of that. Smart of him to take full advantage of the opportunity he was given by the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, no doubt. Especially too, I mean, I feel like the quarterback position down there in Mobile this week, with all respect, was just not very good. If you had a healthy Hendon Hooker down there, I mean, if you had a guy like Stetson Bennett who, you know, turned down that invitation to be there, and then obviously that he didn't have a very good week, I think it would have been a whole lot better. But Hendon Hooker being there, meeting, greeting, I think it went a long way for him. Others who competed in All-Star games this past week, we mentioned about Latrell Bumpus doing the NFLPA Bowl last weekend. But you had Jeremy Banks, linebacker, and then you had offensive lineman Jerome Carvin and tight end Princeton Fance. They took part in the Shrine Bowl, and the Shrine Bowl has been around for, gosh, you know, 50 plus years or whatever. It's another type All-Star showing, and it's another showcase to where it's kind of the level down in terms of All-Star games, but a chance to be seen and heard, and a lot of those guys help themselves out a lot, like Jerome Carvin, who's been here for 5 years and pretty much been a 5-year starter.
Well, and here's the thing you got to remember about All-Star games. It has nothing to do with the game. The game's irrelevant, right? I mean, you know, it's about what you do throughout the entire week. And it's about how you practice. It's about how you handle things in one-on-ones. It's about how you are in the meeting room. It's a week-long audition or interview, if you will. And that's the way, if you're a player, you have to approach it. What you do in the game is irrelevant. I mean, nobody's drafting you if you're the game MVP. You're not climbing up a bunch of draft boards. It's about how you perform throughout the week. And the talk about the Tennessee players is about how they know how to practice. They practice the right way, and they have shown some skills on the practice field that are important. You know, how that shows up on a specific All-Star game doesn't matter. It's about what you do during the week, and I don't think that any of these guys, you know, hurt themselves during the week. I'm going to be really curious to see where Jerome Carvin ends up in the back half of this draft. And kind of what that looks like. The one thing Carvin has going for him is very similar to what Darnell Wright has going for him. The durability factor, Eric, is huge in the National Football League.
Yeah.
You got 53 players that you're active with, right? You got a 53-man roster. You're really only taking 48 into a game, something like that. So you're not taking 10, 12 offensive linemen. You need guys with durability, and the fact that both those guys played as many snaps as they played in college gives you hope and belief that, you know, those are durable guys. And I think that's something that's going to factor in to both of those guys' resume when it comes time for, you know, guys to get the draft board and in the war room and start looking and seeing where they may fall.
You know, it's kind of hard to believe. I mean, there's a couple of different Tennessee Vols that are being, you know, talked about as being first round draft picks, most notably here lately. It's been Darnell Wright because of his strong performance down in Mobile, but Jalin Hyatt's been rumored as a first-round draft pick ever since the Alabama game, and that chatter will ramp up again once he runs at the NFL Combine and does some things at the pro day and whatnot. But you have him. I heard some chatter and read some reports about New Orleans, you know, getting that extra draft pick in the Sean Payton trade at 29th, I believe, in the first round, And that might be a scenario where you see Hendon Hooker even get drafted in the first round, because, you know, there's going to be three quarterbacks drafted in the top 10. Then you'll have Anthony Richardson at some point, and then Hooker's that next one to go. So we know how quarterbacks slide in the draft. We have plenty of time to talk about all this and everything, but isn't it kind of just wild to even think and talk about a couple of Tennessee Volunteers being rumored as first-round draft picks?
Well, and it's great for Josh Heupel in recruiting. It's great for the current players on the team to understand and continue with the buy-in from the development standpoint. Because, as we well know, that those guys weren't on anybody's draft board 2 years ago. Heck, Jalen Hyatt went on anybody's draft board a year ago when he was here. So it gives a lot of credibility. And it's a credit to those kids, but it gives a lot of credibility to the coaching staff that you can sell in recruiting. It's a positive thing for fans to go, hey, this staff is developing people. I continue to believe in them. It helps you in recruiting. It helps you in your own meeting rooms with your guys to see how they've developed. There's no doubt about that, because I think, Eric, we are past the days in recruiting where the facility really matters. Right. You can build all the slides and volleyball courts and miniature putt-putt courses and outdoor fire pits and outdoor basketball courts and all those things that you want to. Kids are looking for, you know, NIL opportunities in the short term, but ultimately they're still looking for all the same thing. Do I have a chance to play at the next level coming out of that school? Can they help me get to my ultimate goal? And that's playing in the next level. And I think that's why it's important that Tennessee has some guys hear their name called earlier in the draft and not late in the draft where they end up making a team, you know, or a free agent guy end up making a team, but a guy who gets drafted early because of the work he's done at the University of Tennessee.
We're going to have Grant Ramey join us here in a couple of minutes to break down Tennessee basketball and what happened over the last week. A 1-1 record, obviously an ugly loss to Florida on the road and surviving over Auburn on Saturday. But before that, let's get to Dan's question here. He said, is Nico's brother going to be down the list for Tennessee? Madden Iamaliava quarterback 2025 class. We've been discussing some 2025 quarterbacks the last month or so, but I think for Madden, Brent, he's never really played, right? And this is going to be a good opportunity for him this spring and spring practice and obviously this upcoming fall to really kind of put his stamp on, you know, what the measurables are and to his last name. I think once he gets out there and actually plays, then there'll be a lot more talk about Madden.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's talked about because he's Nico's little brother.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's always this assumption that means little brother is going to be a really good player. We just don't know. We'll see where his development is at, because he, as you mentioned, has not played like a McIntyre has played, mm-hmm. You know, George McIntyre, who's in the 25 class, and some of these other 25s that Tennessee's already talking to, you know, they're 3-year starters, and that's not the case with Madden. Madden could be a guy who burst on the scene, depending on how he plays. So we'll see what that looks like this fall. It's probably a little too early to cast a judgment either way on how big of a commodity he's going to be, not just for Tennessee, but for schools around the country.
Tennessee's already wrapped up two junior days here to kick off the 2023 calendar year. There will be another junior day coming up in March, and there'll be a lot of guys back on campus to see some spring practices. The orange and white game, which will take place at Neyland Stadium. And Brent, that's always been free of charge, correct?
Depends. Okay. Most of the time, yes.
Okay. So there'll be a lot of guys in town to see
that. I don't know what that looks like this year, but most of the times, yes.
Yeah, it's been one of the questions that's been asked to me the last couple of weeks, and I'm like, as far as I know, it's always been free.
As far as I know, it's going to be free, and I think I would expect that it will be this week or this year as well.
So that's coming up in the next couple of months. Recruiting never stops. Tennessee basketball still on the back half of the SEC schedule, kind of an up and down week, but a quad one win the other day against Auburn. Albeit it was not pretty. We'll get Grant Ramey's thoughts on that and a whole lot more with Tennessee basketball when we return right here on the Rocky Top Rewind.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Tennessee basketball, a 1-1 week. But hey, a win is a win, despite how ugly it may look. On the bright side of things, Brent, elite defense for Tennessee basketball, the number one ranked defense in the country in that 46-43 win over Auburn. As we welcome you guys back into the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock Eastern Time. And Grant Ramey now joins the show, our colleague over at BallQuest.com. Grant, I think at the end of the day, it is another quad one win for Tennessee with elite defense, but that was tough to watch.
It was tough to watch, and yes, it is a quad one win, and it's an ugly win. But you have to think what the last 24 hours would have been if it did not end the way it ended. If it was an ugly loss, I mean, it would have been the snowball and people losing their minds. I'm sure people are losing their minds anyway. But it is, at the end of the day, it's a quad one win. You have really good defense. You've leaned on it all year. You leaned on it again. You had as poorly as you could have played offensively, and they still found a way to win that game. And it's a team, Auburn, that's given them trouble in the past. Now, you look back at Michigan last year, everybody likes to talk about that game and taking away a three-point line. You look at Kentucky a month ago or 3 weeks ago, whenever that was, taking away a three-point line. They went to Florida Wednesday. They lost that game because they could not hit a three-point shot and they couldn't get a stop against Florida. This time around, they didn't hit a shot from the three-point line. I think they're 2-for-21. 9.5% or something like that, and they still found a way to win a game. So it was ugly. It was not fun to watch, but it might have been a sign of progress of, you know, even on the night when shots aren't falling at a pretty incredible rate, you still found a way to beat a pretty good basketball team.
All right, Grant, so here's the million-dollar question everybody has is how does this team go from scoring nearly 80 points against Texas to what happened this past week? Are their legs gone? Is it just a bad night at the – two bad nights at the office? I mean, when you look at this team, do you see anything dramatically different from them offensively? Is it anything they're doing, or is it all defenses?
I think at two games in a row, you kind of chalk it up to just two bad shooting performances back-to-back, and that's unfortunate. One's on the road, one's at home, so it doesn't really make a ton of sense. If it continues, if it lingers into next week, three, four games, whatever, five games, then it becomes more of a trend and a problem. Now, this team has won a game shooting 69% of it from the field, like they did against Mississippi State about a month ago at Thompson Bowling Arena. And they've won games against Maryland shooting 29%. They won Saturday against Auburn shooting 27%. So it's not like we haven't seen this team go from one night they're tearing it up on the offensive end to the next night it looks like they've never played offense in their life, and it's the first time they're shooting a basketball. So until I think it becomes stringing it four or five games in a row or something like that, it becomes more of a trend, then you get concerned. Until otherwise, I think they're still – because we saw it last Saturday. They were number 31 or something, I think, in Ken Pom's adjusted offensive efficiency. I think they're number 64 after Auburn. So that's kind of the range of how quickly this can change. It's just a matter of, is this a one- or two-game thing, or is this a two- or three-week thing?
Grant, how would you describe Santiago Vescovi's kind of mentality right now, his play of late? In this game, 2-of-7, 1-of-6. He had that big play there towards the end, which was huge, that four-point play. But the last couple of games, how would you describe kind of his not preparation, but his mentality heading into these games?
I mean, I don't know if he's physically himself. Yeah. We talked to him last week, and I asked him if that shoulder was still bothering him. I guess that was Monday. We were talking about going to the Florida game and stuff like that. But he says his shoulder's fine. He doesn't really feel it. But just based on the shooting percentages, this happened. It first happened in December. He had a shoulder sprain, the left shoulder, his shooting shoulder. Then he kind of re-aggravated it in that loss against Kentucky early in that game when he hit the deck going for a loose ball. And ever since then, if you kind of look at the numbers, he hasn't quite been himself. He's a better shooter than what he's shown the last, you know, month or so. And I don't know if that's why he would admit that the shoulder's bothering him, but it's the only thing I can figure out, because, yes, he's getting game plan for, but he got game plan for a time last year too. And he still made 102 three-point shots or something like that by the end of the year. So I don't know. Zakai struggled too, and maybe that's from being game planned against. But I think Santi is more used to being that guy that other teams are trying to take away. For him to have as many, I don't know, off nights in a row, he still affects the games in other ways, and he gives you something on the court even when he's not making shots. But for him to string together some nights where it just looks like he's not shooting the ball well, it makes you wonder if that shoulder's 100%.
Grant, I mean, this team, I mean, he's got to score, right? And Zakai has – I mean, they're not going to go as far as anybody wants them to go in the postseason if those guys, you know, can't find ways to score. Does Coach – you think they need to play less minutes? Are they expending too much energy on the defensive end? I mean, and I know Santi's always been a good defensive player, and so is Zakai, but, I mean, Both those guys are playing 32 plus minutes a game now. Is fatigue any kind of a factor? You say that, but then all of a sudden, Santi makes a three late, right? I mean,
right.
So I don't know. I'm asking. I don't know.
I mean, you know, Rick was talking about Saturday night after the Auburn game. He's talking about how happy he was with Jemai Meshack. And he's like, man, I go into games trying to figure out where can I get him some more minutes. So if fatigue is a factor, then, yeah, there are guys that are averaging over 30 minutes a night where you have to wonder how many nights in a row can that happen back-to-back-to-back in terms of game days and stuff like that. So, yeah, if you wanted to lighten the load, yeah, you could. But, I mean, with Zakai, with Santi, those are the two guys that I've never really worried about in terms of fatigue. Because they're, you know, Rick says it all the time. They're in the best cardio shape of anybody on the team, anybody he's been around, coach, you know, all that stuff. So I don't know if it's a leg thing. Sometimes I think it's them passing up too many shots, you know, if that makes sense. Everybody sees all the shots that don't go in and complains about this offense, but there's so many possessions where there's shots passed up early in the possession. Later in that possession, it just becomes a turnover. I mean, these guys talk about all the time. Their offense starts when the ball's on the rim in terms of attacking the glass, going to get it and doing something with it. Well, put it on the rim then. I mean, stop passing up these shots. Stop looking for, you know, passing up a good shot for a great shot and just settle for the good shot and see what you can do. I don't know if it's fatigue. I would be surprised if it was for any of those two guys that we were talking about, but I don't know. We'll see how they respond starting this week at Vanderbilt.
Grant, let me ask you this, but before Eric jumps back in here, big picture of college football, we're seeing a bunch of ranked teams every week get beat, right? I mean, there's nobody's running the table here. We're also seeing scoring kind of fluctuate, right? I mean, nobody's averaging 85, 87 plus a game on a consistent basis. Is that because shooting has dropped off? Is that defense has been able to switch 1 through 4, 1 through 5, and you're not getting as many looks, you know, from some teams? What do you think? And I'm trying to encapsulate Tennessee into that equation as well. Why do you think it's been such a yo-yo this year?
I think defensive versatility is probably a good place to start. I mean, everybody talks about wanting to be able to switch 1 through 5. I mean, that's a principle for Rick right there on his defense, is versatility and those guys that he wants. In this game, in college basketball, I guess this season specifically, it feels like there's not a ton of superstars in this sport. I mean, Brandon Miller scored it at a crazy rate, but, I mean, there's other guys across the sport. Drew Timmy, I mean, I don't know what his stats are. There's just not a ton of huge names, it feels like, in the sport this year. And that's what I was thinking Saturday night when I was watching some other games. Like, it wasn't 46-43 like we watched at Thompson Bowling Arena, but it's, you know, Duke beats Carolina 63-57. It feels like there's a lot of these games. Florida and Kentucky, I believe, was in the 60s, something like that. It just feels like there's a lot of games where it just looks like the defense, I don't know what it is about college basketball or at this level, where it's, I don't know if it's ahead of the offense or just outpacing the offense, or maybe it's that versatility you're talking about where it's just more effective on the defensive end and it's just harder to score in this game for whatever reason. And it might just be right now, this point of the season. This is a tough kind of dog days part of the season where it's not early anymore. It's not, you know, it's not late yet. You're working towards March, but you got a lot of tough games left on the schedule and you're trying to not get too far ahead of yourself. And you're just trying to get through this. And there's a lot of tough conference games for everybody this time of year.
Grant Madspeeden wants to know, is this basketball team too focused on the defensive end? And then VolGuy23 said he'd like to see Tobe Awaka get some more minutes. What would you say to that?
I would agree on Tobe. I thought he gave him something good off the bench against Auburn in the first half on Saturday. I think Jemai as well could use a – I mean, Rick talked about how happy he was. I think he played 7 minutes or something like that. And he had 4 points, I think, and maybe 4 shots in those 7 minutes, which they need more of that. They need more guys that are aggressive. I don't know if they're too tuned in defensively. I think they might be thinking too much offensively. Just go out there and play ball. I mean, Rick's thing is he's going to preach – play defense and get lost, you know, get lost in the game starting on the defensive end. Worry about your defense, worry about your rebounding, and your offense is going to come to you. He's preached that every year I've been around him, and that's going to continue to be the focus. But I think they need to relax and just play basketball on the offensive end more and stop trying to have perfect possessions because they don't exist. Find a good shot, get it up, go attack the glass and see what happens from there.
Grant, any concern about this team pressing offensively after two games with you know, coming down, you know, the stretch here? I mean, you're talking about getting lost in the game. Do you think this team can do that, or do you think that it can mount on them offensively, you know, and turn into 3 or 4 games here?
I think Saturday was a big response because, you know, Florida was a disastrous start. 15-0 run for Florida early on. They got down 17-4. And then they cut it to single digits. It was, I think, 6 at halftime. They still had scoreless stretches there. They get back up. They take the lead at Florida for the first time in the second half or whatever it was, and they build the lead to 6 with about 9 minutes left, and Florida goes on that 13-0 run. So I thought Saturday was a big response in terms of when shots aren't falling, they could have very easily lost that game. So I don't know if they're pressing offensively as much as they found some more answers defensively, as crazy as that sounds, as much as they've leaned on that defense too. Because it would have been really easy to lose that game against Auburn, and it would have been really easy for that to be a disastrous outcome, and you're worried about where this season's heading. Now, going to Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt's a bad basketball team. It's not an easy gym to score in because it's such a weird, unique place, and every team kind of has its own issues there, so that's different. But I think the way they answered, I don't feel like they're pressing offensively because they have so much faith and trust in their defense and knowing what they can do on the defensive end, if that makes any sense.
Hey, Grant, last thing I got for you, man. How important is this next swing of games, Vanderbilt, Missouri, a couple quad two games before? And again, those won't be gimmies, but you got your work cut out for you for Alabama and Kentucky after that.
Yeah, you got to go to Vanderbilt. You've won 11 in a row in the series. You've won 5 in a row, I believe, at Vanderbilt. So that's a game you got to win. You're better than Vanderbilt. Go on the road, win that game. It doesn't matter if you're not at home. Missouri's a good basketball team. I think Dennis Gates is one of the best stories in the SEC this year in terms of what he's doing his first year there, what Mizzou's done the last few years before he got there. Now, they're not very good away from home. They went to Mississippi State Saturday night, lost by 11, never led in that game. So Tennessee, having them at home, yeah, you need to take care of business this week, go 2-0, because you've got a stretch coming up where it's Alabama, it's Kentucky, it's Texas A&M, it's Arkansas. You got to go back to Auburn the last game of the season. So it's a backloaded schedule. You better take care of business when you can.
What's your hat? I can't tell what's on your hat.
The Twin Cities,
Minnesota
baby.
Twins. Yeah, I got St. Paul guy on one side, the Minnesota guy on the other side. They're shaking hands over the river.
And Puckett and Kent Herbeck.
And this is our baseball guy, Hubs. You didn't even know who the Twins were.
I just couldn't see the hat. I mean, I can't see the hat. I mean, I don't
know. Do you know who Kirby Puckett is, Eric Kane?
I do not.
Kent Herbeck.
Austin Price saw the water, and he thought it was the South Pacific.
What about Jack Morris? Do you know who Jack Morris is, Kane?
Austin was trying to figure out what country club logo you had on your hat right there. So what you had going on with that one.
Ironically, we had Santi out on the locker room tonight, and I think he's wearing the exact same, mucus green sweatshirt that Grant's wearing right now.
He's just trying to be like me.
It's olive, all right?
Hey, listen, we're just glad you don't have a hoodie on. You look presentable tonight. I guess you had church small group over, so that's
talking about me?
Yeah.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
What about me?
He's got the flannel on tonight. Grab.
Huh? Here, let me go like that. How's this? Is this better?
Grant, appreciate it, man. Thanks for your time, and we'll look forward to what you got coming up tomorrow on the site.
Thanks, Grant.
All right. AP's in the show now. Austin, you had a chance to catch up with Alec Ablin like we did here on the Rocky Top Rewind. You got a chance to catch up with Byron Young on The Nation as well. First and foremost, your thoughts on the hire, the promotion from within of Tennessee's new tight end coach?
Well, I think we've figured out real quick here that Josh Heupel is going to always go with comfort if he has the choice, in my opinion. Very comfortable with Alec Ablin. The more I've spoke with Alec Ablin the last 3, 4, 5 days, the more impressed I am by him, and the more I can see why Josh Heupel went the route he went. I thought Abe did a really nice job. I was watching him driving home from the locker room, watching him on with you guys. We had him on The Nation. I thought he did well there as well. Seems like a smart guy. And when I did the little thing with Cooper the other night, after we're done recording, Cooper goes, "Austin," he goes, none of that was fake. He goes, he really connects well with the guy, the players like Abe. And so he goes, I'm not worried about his ability to recruit. He goes, now he's, probably going to have a learning curve just because it's different. But he goes, once he gets it, I think he'll be really good at it. So, not that, Cooper Mays is the end all be all as far as, his take on everything. But, I think he's got a pretty level head. And, again, he's one of your target age group that you're trying to connect with if you're a coach. So, I think that Alec Ablin is, you know, going to, in the short term, really, I think, be a nice hire for Josh Heupel. Again, long term, I think it depends on how well he and how quickly he can adjust to recruiting. But that's just something none of us know about.
Austin, I feel like, at least from an offensive perspective, I mean, I know coaching will have a learning curve. And, of course, he's been in a coaching, you know, atmosphere the last couple of years, not being a player. But from the offensive mindset of it, I mean, he played in this offense. He has only coached in this offense at every step of the way he's been. And maybe because, and that's why I ask him, you know, he has an offensive line kind of background and everything, but the transition over to tight ends, and he's already worked with the tight ends group, it should be kind of seamless there. I think from that perspective, it makes so much sense. And as you mentioned, I mean, Heupel loves making the promotions from within because it's something that he covets, and that's being his offense.
Yeah, I thought his story with you guys about how, you know, he got passed by as an offensive lineman going into his senior year, and they moved him to tight end. I thought that was fascinating because, I mean, again, that's something I sure didn't know, and I don't think anybody else did either, that, you know, he's had a chance to, you know, kind of be in the offense as a tight end, to understand the nuances of tight end. It's not just as simple as, you know, hey, you play quarterback, now you're going to coach tight ends, you know, or you played wide receiver, but now you're going to coach running backs. You know, he's actually done it in this offense. So, I mean, you know, that's a feather in his cap to be able to, you know, talk about his experience.
We have a question here from Garrett Austin asking about Cam Miller and saying, do you ever think he's going to see the field? Haven't heard an awful lot about Cam Miller. Miller was switched from wide receiver to the defensive back room prior to last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a big spring for Cam. You know, you hope that he can take a step. You know, whatever he did last year is irrelevant to me. He was nowhere near ready physically to play. You know, I think playing single A and double A ball, mentally going to this league, I'm not saying you can't do it, because Trey Smith went from small school private or middle road private to, you know, starting in the SEC year one. So you can do it, but I do think there's a learning curve there. And so I don't worry about what happened last year. I think Cam's probably got to go through another year. You just hope he takes a step this year, you know. Yeah. And you'd hope you don't get like the, you know, well, I'm not playing, I'm gonna go to the portal, because that's what happens. I mean, like, so much of these players that aren't ready, you know, they cannot be ready. Like, let's say those tackles, Hubber, you know, some of those young tackles probably won't play this year. Are they going to knee-jerk it and run to the portal just because they're not played, or are they going to give it another year? So much of the reaction is from all players across the country to knee-jerk it and try to go to the portal before you're ready.
Yeah, you know, and I think the other thing for Cam Miller is I think we're still unsure exactly where he plays, right?
I mean, I don't think he's locked into safety.
Yeah, what's his position? How big is he going to get? You know, what can they, you know, where can he find this spring? How big does he get this winter size-wise? How much weight does he put on? What does he turn into physically? And as he changes, Austin, does that help him get on the field, or does that hurt his chances to get on the field? Because his body's going to change.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he came in and physically, yeah, he was nowhere close to being ready to go. You know, not that he was super out of shape, he just wasn't there. And so, you know, I think for Cam, you know, being able to spend an entire year in the weight room is a good thing. You know, I've not seen him lately, and so I'd like to see what he does look like having, you know, as he goes through another winter conditioning.
It hasn't happened yet, but I do want to give you your props. You started this really a couple months ago. Darnell Wright, first rounder. There's been a lot of chatter about Darnell Wright potentially sneaking in that first round. There's still months to go before the draft, but he had a really good week down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. He was American practice offensive lineman of the week, voted on by the defensive linemen and the guys he went up against in practice. I think that's a huge accomplishment. What can you say about the Tennessee offensive tackle who – man, he's still so young, got so much experience, and it feels like he really helped himself out this past week.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest feather in Darnell's cap. He's super young. I mean, he's just 21. When he enters fall camp in the NFL, he'll turn 22, and he'll have started for 4 years at the collegiate level, having done all that, and started every bit for 4 years. I'm not surprised. You know, Darnell hasn't done interviews outside of doing some few things with me, and so he's more of a mystery, I think, for NFL teams. But I think the more he talks, the more he interviews, he's going to interview well. He's an engaging kid, you know, who's got a big heart, who, you know, probably gets it more than most people think he does. And then I will be stunned. I sit here on, what is today, the 5th of February. I will be stunned when the combine rolls around in 3 weeks' time if he doesn't test off the charts at his size. Jumping, running, shuttle, all that stuff. I think he will be dynamite at the combine. I just, and again, doing it at his size is what's most impressive. I think he'll show well there, and I think he gets into the first round. I just have always felt that he has so much upside, and really, when you think about where he was when Glenn Ellerbe got him, where he is as Glenn Ellerbe, you know, pushes him to the NFL. I mean, two totally different kids. Kid loved Ellerbe, bought into everything, and he, to me, that's the best thing going for Glenn Ellerbe. You want Darnell Wright to get drafted in the first round.
Yeah.
You want to be able to turn around and go, hey, look at this.
Yeah, no doubt. Here's the other thing, too. If I'm an NFL team, okay, I want to talk to Darnell Wright, but I don't want the director, just the director of scouting talking to him, or an assistant GM or the GM. I want to take Darnell Wright and put him in the room with the O-line coach and see how they click and see how they go. Because one of the biggest growths for Darnell Wright, as Austin just mentioned, was the fact that he resonated with Glenn Ellerbe. And I love Darnell. Darnell doesn't trust out the gate, right? And if he doesn't trust Austin, he'll shut down. Like I'm not saying he quits or anything like that, but his engagement level at Tennessee, in terms of work ethic, in terms of everything he did, jumped dramatically under Glenn Ellerbe because he bought into Glenn Ellerbe from day one. They connected for whatever reason. I think that's going to be important for whatever NFL team looks to draft Darnell Wright, because I think he's got to click with that guy.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. You know, I will give Darnell a lot of credit. You know, a lot of people were head scratching when he requested to go back to the right side, to leave left tackle, go to right tackle. But I think he just made himself a ton of money going to that right tackle spot because that's where he feels comfortable. You know, not saying he can't play left. He can play left in the NFL. They needed him to.
He played left this last weekend.
Yeah. So, but I mean, like, I think that, you know, he's somebody that's got versatility. I think Darnell's also a guy that could play guard if they needed him to. You know, he's kind of got this weird body that, like, he's long enough to play tackle. He's big enough to play tackle, but he's also kind of big enough to play inside as well if they needed him to. He's got versatility. Again, I think sky's the limit. A kid that, again, is just 21 years old and has 4 years of starting experience at college.
Yeah,
you know, so many of the kids that go to college now were held back a year and are 19 when they enter. Darnell was 17 when he entered. It's a huge difference.
You know, it's interesting. I don't think, Eric, that Darnell did this. This was no. I mean, he moved to the right side because he was most comfortable there. So he goes to the Senior Bowl, and everybody's got on your sheet of paper, you have two questions about Darnell Wright. One, what's this dude all about? Because he never talked to anybody, right? We never saw him. We never heard an interview with him other than, as Austin mentioned, a couple of things. So that's question one. The other question you're going to ask is, why does a guy move from left to right? So what do? Physically, you throw him to the left side to see if he can play left. And guess what? He does okay over there at left tackle, and he generates even more momentum. That wasn't his plan, but it really works out in his favor that, you know, he answered that question on the field this week because everybody was going to take him immediately, Eric, and slide him over to the left side and figure out what the problem was. Yeah. Wait a minute, why is this guy a junior left tackle, but he goes back to right? Like, what's the weakness there? Oh, wait a minute, he could play legitimately either side.
And I think, too, if you ask him and ask his coaches and dig kind of read between the lines a little bit, you're in a situation where, sure, he might be more comfortable on the right side, but also you're helping the team out when you move back to the right side because you were in a situation last year where you had an incoming tackle. You weren't sold on the one you had in Jeremiah Crawford potentially at the time. You had Gerald Mincy coming in. And he's in the position to where he just plays left tackle. So in order to try to get the best five guys out there on the field, moving back to right tackle was kind of a necessity at the time. And so even more so than that, it's showing that he can be a team player. So he had a really good week, played a little left, played a little right tackle. I watched most of it, and I read a bunch of articles about him down in Mobile. So intrigued to see what this happens from him and, of course, the combine and the draft. Dan wants to know, that's a question for both of you guys, and that's a fair question right now, honestly. Better offensive lineman, Trey Smith or Darnell Wright, in your opinion, maybe at the time of them leaving their college careers?
Well,
Trey's up there in the NFL now.
Trey's a guard who can play tackle.
Yeah.
And Darnell is a tackle who can play guard. I don't think you can totally compare the two. I think they're both just really, really good. And, you know, again, I look at like, you know, like somebody put on there the other day, hope my Steelers take, you know, Darnell Wright. Dude, I think Darnell Wright, if he went to a team like Pittsburgh, would flourish. You know, getting there with a veteran coach like Tomlin and some of those veteran staffs that he has, I think he would just flourish. Again, I think it's all about fit. I told Trey Smith, like, after he got drafted, I'm like, the best thing that ever happened to you, brother, was going to a team that's established a quarterback. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, you look at Cade. Cade's fine over there at Carolina, but they're so unsettled at quarterback. You know, whereas, like, in Kansas City, Mahomes is there for the next 15 years. I mean, Trey will play 10 plus years in the NFL, have the same quarterback in every game, unless he somehow ends up not playing with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question trying to compare the two, because they're hard to compare. Trey was the more polished, more prepared player in the eyes of everyone, but he had the health issue that scared everybody away.
Yep.
But I mean, I'm not sure that NFL people, if they put the truth monitor on him, aren't going to look at him and go, Darnell's got a higher ceiling. But again, it's because he can play tackle. Tackle in that league is so hard to play. Trey's going to play forever and make a gazillion dollars playing guard, assuming he stays healthy. And you're right, he's in the perfect place for him. And I'm not, I say that about Darnell's ceiling being higher. And that's not to say Trey can't play, because Trey obviously played as a rookie. He started as a rookie in the NFL. I mean, come on, right? But, you know, Darnell's going to, his measurables are going to be better. His athleticism is going to be better. And he plays tackle. So a lot of people are going to fall in love with his upside. Now, will it pan out the way Trey is? Trey was so mature, such a pro when he was here the whole time and when he left. Darnell's still a kid. He does not have the same business approach, Austin, that Trey has. That's a big difference between those two. That's something else Darnell has to answer in this draft process.
Yeah, I mean, Trey was 30 at 17.
Right. He was old soul.
He looked like it and spoke like it.
You know, and Darnell, it's not to say Darnell can't handle himself, because I think he can 100%. But again, he's not been pushed into the limelight to talk a ton, to do all those things. You know, so like, you know, again, I go back to, you know, everybody saying, you know, get into the back end of round one. Well, you're getting drafted by one or two type of teams in the back of round one. You're either getting drafted by a team that just went deep in the playoffs, which is normally means you're pretty good at quarterback, and that's kind of what I'm talking about with Trey, or you're getting drafted by a team that traded back into the end of round one from the front of round two because they were trying to get a player like Darnell Wright that they didn't think would be there. And so, you know, again, I think for Darnell, you know, sky's the limit. Again, I can't wait to see 3 weeks from now. I'm going to have my tonsillectomy on the 21st, and I'm going to be laid up watching the combine, and I'll be interested to see how he does, you know, while I'm sitting there eating ice cream, because I think that I will be shocked if he's not, you know, numbers-wise through the roof.
Yeah, another note, too, on Darnell Wright. I know we just got a minute or so left here, but, you know, when Heupel came, Austin – He was north of 355, wasn't he? And
yeah.
they said, hey, you got to lose 20 to 25 pounds now. And he did. And he shrunk down. And, well, and again, that is, in my opinion, another example of when he is dedicated to something, when he puts his mind to something, he will go out there and do it, accomplish it, and look at the career he's had at Tennessee.
So COVID, as pointed out by Darnell himself on Avalco Confidential, COVID destroyed Darnell.
Yeah.
He went home to West Virginia because everybody was at home. He was eating pizza and burgers and Twinkies and everything, and he got up north of 360. So he came back, and he played that 2020 year way overweight, which means at the end of that year when Heupel and them arrived, yes, he was way overweight. And they kind of, you know, again, back to Hubs' point about, you know, buying into Glenn Ellerbe. When he bought into Ellerbe, he bought into the weight room, everything that they were selling, boom, boom, boom. And again, when he's focused, he's really good.
All right. Big thank you to Alec Ablin, Tennessee's new tight end coach, for joining the show here tonight. Grant Ramey and Austin Price, a lot of NFL draft buzz with the Senior Bowl wrapping up. And as Austin pointed out, NFL Combine is going to be in a couple of weeks. There'll be pro days, all that and more. And there'll be, you know, potentially not one, not two, maybe even three potential volunteers looking to be drafted in the first round, but a lot of time between now and then. A lot of stuff over VolQuest.com. Come and check us out. $29.99 for a one-year subscription over VolQuest.com. That deal is good until kickoff. Take advantage of it right now. $30 for a one-year subscription of VolQuest.com until kickoff 2023. For Brent Hubbs, Austin Price.
Hold on a second. Programming note to everyone out there. We're going to watch the Super Bowl next Sunday because I'm not sure anybody's interested in talking about anything else other than that point. So we are not going to do a show next Sunday night. So mark your programming note there. We're taking a one-week hiatus with the Super Bowl, and then we will be back at it in 2 weeks here. So if you're looking for us next Sunday night, you're not going to see us. We're not doing away with the show. We're not disappearing. We're going to take a week off so everybody can enjoy the Super Bowl, and then we'll be back at it the week after. And at that point, Tennessee will be about a little less than a month away from the start of spring practice.
Who you got, Hubs? Eagles or Chiefs?
I'm going to take the Eagles to win in this game. Okay. I think I'm going to take the Eagles.
Everything says pick the Eagles, but I will pick Kansas City because Patrick Mahomes. What about you?
I'm going to go with the Chiefs as well for the same reasons you just said. Everything says Eagles to me, like the toughness, the defense. Yeah. But Mahomes just finds a way. He had no business winning the AFC Championship game. No, everybody out. You and I were out there running routes for the Chiefs.
Yeah, he finds a way on one leg too. All right, that'll do it here for this edition of the Rockies Out Rewind. For Austin Price and Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us here today. We'll see you in a couple of weeks for another edition of the Rocky Top Roundtable.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.